This is going to be a discussion about tefillah, and we're going to start with an introduction to tefillah. I want to share with you an idea that completely, fundamentally changed the way I daven. Okay, all the things that you shared about how you perceive tefillah to be long, inconvenient, etc., along with opportunity, goal-oriented, etc., they can't be wrong because they're who you are and what you think, right? And I used to struggle with those things to a great extent when I was in high school. And then I saw something that completely changed the way I look at tefillah, the way I daven. And now, for me, tefillah is this incredible opportunity and experience. I cannot imagine living without tefillah in my life. I can't imagine a day without tefillah in my life. To me, it's much like Shabbat. Like, you know, once you get a taste of Shabbat, by the end of the year, you'll know what we mean, although you already got a taste this past Shabbos. Who would not want that in their life? Who wouldn't want that once a week? Wait till you have a family and you have kids. You have the opportunity to just stop and chill and connect with your family. Who wouldn't want that? And the problem with tefillah is that most people don't even know what it is. And the perception that most people have of what tefillah is, at least to my perception, so different from what tefillah really is supposed to be, that it makes sense to me that people struggle with tefillah. There's a general truism that I find here in Oraita, which is most of the struggles that people have with Jewish concepts, Jewish issues, are very correct and very true, precisely because people's perception of what those issues are somehow, at least from my perception, off. Guy comes to me and says, I hate Gemara. He's right. But that's because the Gemara he hates just isn't what Gemara is. If he knew what Gemara was, I can't imagine who wouldn't want that in their life, right? And I don't have an agenda that a person should fall in love with Gemara. Well, that's actually not true. I have an agenda that a person should fall in love with learning, fall in love with Gemara. But I'm okay with a boy who leaves yeshiva and never got into Gemara, right? But that would not mean that that boy is doing anything wrong. It would mean that we didn't succeed in communicating and sharing. What an incredible experience and how much value there can be in Gemara. But as much as Gemara is valuable and learning is valuable, I don't think it even compares to the essence of tefillah and how critical a piece tefillah is in Judaism. It's interesting to note, by the way, that whenever you notice, and you see this in teenagers, you know, show me a kid who's really struggling with Judaism, what some people would call off the derech, whatever the derech is, you know, no longer religious, whatever religious means. 90% of the time, it starts with tefillah. You show me a kid who's davening with tremendous kavana, he's in the zone. He may be headed for a crisis, but he's still in the zone. That's usually the first thing that you start to notice. And one day when your parents, you'll see this on your kid. If your kid loves coming to shul and loves davening with you, you don't have to worry about whether he's keeping kosher. Right? So, I want to get into what tefillah is, and it's going to take us a while, because these are 20-minute, today is the first day we're doing it, so it usually takes a little longer, but these are going to be 20-minute zones. We're really going to try to start at 9, right? Every day, and finish at the time for shiur. I think that there are certain questions that we have, that most people have with regards to tefillah, that form obstacles to developing a relationship with tefillah. So part of what we're going to do is we're going to try to explore these questions, and I'm going to share with you my perception. One last caveat, I'm really not looking, and I don't think Oraita is looking, to convince anyone or any of you to daven or to enjoy tefillah, to get into tefillah. What I'm interested in doing is sharing with you my relationship with tefillah. What you do with that is up to you. If at the end of the year all that has changed is that you don't think that someone who loves davening is nuts, but you still think it's not for you, I can live with that, right? If I had to pick a few examples of the questions that people struggle with in tefillah, I'll just give you an example, but there are many more that we'll get to. So let's say you walk into, I don't know, Mincha today. Right before Mincha you hear that an Israeli madrich who was, I don't know, your madrich, you know, in the summer program, he was in Aza. His Nagmash, his APC, got hit by an RPG, and his leg got blown off. And he's in Soroka Hospital in Be'er Sheva at this very moment, and they're performing an emergency surgery to try to save his leg. And it really hits you. Like, you know, kid your age, and he might lose his leg. Like, that's a life-changing experience. So you get into Mincha, and you can't take this off your head. It's just so deep in your mind. When you get to Refa'inu, when you get to that portion of Tefillah that's all about heal us and who's sick, and so you just get lost. And you're so in that moment, and you're asking Hashem to heal this boy, and you mean it so sincerely and so powerful. Like you open up your eyes and everybody's already finished. They finished Mincha. And you feel like you really had this intense Tefillah experience. And on the one hand, that's very high level, because it means that from a certain perspective, you recognize that in order for this boy to be healed, Hashem has to want him to be healed. So I guess that's a high level. You recognize there's a value to asking Hashem this. But then you walk out of davening and you start to think about this, and you realize this whole paradigm is completely ridiculous. It makes no sense. First of all, why do I have to go to shul to ask Hashem to heal somebody? But putting that aside, why do I have to ask Hashem at all? Why do I have to ask Hashem for what I want? Hashem already knows what I want. Hashem knows what I want before I know what I want. In fact, Hashem knows everything that I'm going to ever want forever. And third of all, who made the person sick to begin with? So what's the game? Most people go into davening, and whether it's conscious or subconscious, they're trying to change God's mind. You made him sick, I think he should be better. Please make him better. Right? But that makes no sense. Pasuk says, Ani Hashem lo shineti. Hashem doesn't change. Hashem is ever, is eternity, is all-knowing, all-encompassing. As you get deeper into class with Rabbi Aaron, and over the course of the year, you know, we're not in reality next to Hashem. Hashem is the source of reality. Hashem is reality. We're in reality. We're in Hashem. We're aspects of Hashem. So trying to change Hashem makes no sense. So then what is tefillah? And by the way, how come the language of tefillah seems to imply I am trying to change Hashem? So that whole topic and many others is what we're going to try to get to. In order to get somewhere, before we talk about what tefillah is, we have to talk about what tefillah is not. Okay? Tefillah is not prayer. The word prayer is not a Jewish word, right? If you look up prayer in the dictionary, it's actually a Christian word. I don't pass judgment on Christianity. I don't consider myself an expert on Christianity. I'm working on Judaism. But it is a very Christian idea. If you look up in the dictionary the word prayer, you will find that it means to beg or to entreat. Like, for example, you ever see a praying mantis or a picture of a praying mantis looks like this, right? Like I'm begging. I'm nothing, you're everything. Oh, judge, I throw myself before the mercy of the court. Change the verdict, right? But as we're going to see, that doesn't make a lot of sense, right? So what is tefillah? So let me share with you an idea. And again, what you do with this idea is totally up to you. But this idea fundamentally changed everything, at least for me. Okay, I do have one rule with the payment karot. Some of you already heard this. You can pass this around. Thank you. If you're going to keep this daf makaros, this source sheet, I'm going to give you different ones as we go along. You can keep a folder. You can hang on to them. You don't have to hang on to them. You don't need this to follow the class. If you're the type of person who prefers to just listen and chill, and that's fine too. But if you're going to keep this daf makaros, then you have to put your name on it. Okay? I have a pet peeve. I hate all these extra daf makaros floating all around the Beis Medrash. Then we have to throw them out. That's a waste. It's not mechubad. So if you're going to keep it, and that way we find it, we'll know whose it is. If at the end of class you know you're going to give it back to me or just leave it on the table, so then fine. So there are different roots that relate to the concept of tefillah. Two of them are palel, which is the root of tefillah, and nafol, which is very much and very closely related to tefillah for a lot of reasons. When Rachel names her surrogate son Naphtali, right, one of Yaakov's 12 boys, right? So she says, right, Naftulei Elokim Niftalti. Rav Shimshon Farel Hirsch translates this as, I have struggled the struggles of God. So from one perception, and by the way, if you look in Unkelus, Unkelus is a very important source text. Most people think that Unkelus is an Aramaic translation. The translation is a commentary. He very often adds words that aren't in the Pasuk to explain them. So he's a commentary. Unkelus lived in the time of the Mishnah. He was a Tana, right? So it's pretty significant. He's a Ger. Some amazing stories about Unkelus. You can ask Rav Dardik, he'll fill you in, right? So if you look in Unkelus, right? The Amr Tachel Kabel Hashem Ba'uti Be'it Chananuti B'tzloti Chamediti Li V'lad. Right? So what does the word Tzloti mean? Right? Titkabel Tzlotana, right? Which we say in Kaddish. Tzlota is tefillah. What you would translate as prayer. And Rachel is thankful for the fact that what I wanted, right? The word Chamedit, lo tachmod, is what I desire, what I covet, what I want, right? And so she's praying for what she wants. And that sounds suspiciously like I'm trying to get you to change the verdict, but we'll get to that in a second. So struggle, right, is very much related to tefillah. But now go a stage further, right? Skip to number two. Yaakov is on his deathbed. Okay? And when Yaakov is on his deathbed, Yosef comes to see him. This is an incredibly poignant moment, right? Because Hashem is giving, the Medrash says this is the first time a person ever gets sick. certainly Pshat in the Torah, this is the first time we ever find a person who is sick on his deathbed, right? And the Medrash implies that Yaakov is being given a gift by God, that Hashem makes him sick before he dies. It's a little strange from our perception, unless you stop to think about it. You know, I have a close friend, Zach Baumel. He's been missing in action since 1982, Battle of Sultan Yaakov in Lebanon. If you ask me sometime when we're doing stories, I'll tell you the story. It's an amazing story. It's a powerful, painful story. But over the years, I got very close to this family, his parents. His father passed away about 2.5 years ago. Never found out what happened to his son. And he told me once that the most powerful pasuk for him in the entire Torah was when the brothers come to Yaakov and they want to tell him that Yosef is dead, even though he isn't. They can't look him in the eye. They can't actually say your son is dead. So they take this technicolor coat and they dip it in blood and they cast it before him. Hakir nam lemi asher, recognize whose this is. And Yaakov instantly understands what's happened. But it says in the pasuk, right? Velohit necham. Okay? He cannot be comforted, right? Or v'yema'en lehit necham. He cannot be comforted. So Yerubamal told me, why did he refuse to be comforted? Because he has no closure. He doesn't know what happened. He has no opportunity to say goodbye. He told me, if he could have one wish in his entire life, all he would want is 60 seconds with his son to watch him die and be able to say goodbye, he'd be okay with that. Right? So this is a powerful moment. And Yaakov chooses very carefully what it is he's saying to Yosef. And he says to Yosef in Perek Mem Chet, in number 2 here, Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, Ra'ofanecha lo pilalti. I never paleled that I would ever see you. Hashem not only brought me back to you, showed me you, but also I got to see grandchildren from you. So Rashi says, what does that mean? I never paleled I would ever see you. So Rashi says, right? Lo milani libi lachshav. My heart didn't fill with the possibility of thinking. Or machshava sherefa nechaod. I wasn't even filled with the thought that I would see you again. I didn't imagine. I didn't dream. I didn't wish. I didn't want. I didn't wake up wanting to see you because I didn't imagine I could. I thought you were dead. So palel then, according to Rashi, this is not my idea, this is Rav Kook, in the Olat HaRiyah, which we'll get to. Rashi suggests, therefore, that palel is all about wanting, wishing, dreaming. Now, many of you studied Hebrew, high school, and you may know there are 7 different ways to conjugate a verb in the Hebrew language, right? Poel, piel, puel, hitpael, right? Efal. I could say yashavti, I sat down. That's the poel form. I can say hityashavti, I sat myself down. The reflexive, something I do to myself. I could say lavashti, I wore this incredibly stylish, fashionable shirt that I know you all wish you had, right? Or I could say hitlabashti, I dressed myself in a shirt. Now, we don't say palalti. We say hit palalti in the reflexive. Because tefillah is something that I'm doing to and with myself. So if we put this all together, what that means is that tefillah is struggling with what it is that I want, what I wish for, what my dreams are. Now, I want you to understand. What you want is who you are. You learn a lot about a person and what they want. Right? Chassidus teaches nothing comes into this world unless we want it to. The act of wanting is what allows something to come into the world. In fact, when something doesn't exist in the world, it's very often because we don't want it enough. Right? Why is there a yeshiva Torah? Because a few people really wanted to build it. If nobody would have wanted it, and really, to be honest, the real reason there's a yeshiva Torah is because a group of you guys want what this place has to offer. If you didn't have that wanting, there wouldn't be a yeshiva. Why is there no Beis HaMikdash? Why is the temple not built right over there on that mountain? Because we don't want it enough. Most people don't even know what it means, what it is. We'll get to that too. Right? So, therefore, what I want is very important. You know, sometimes you so want somebody to want something, but you can't get somebody to want what they don't want. Right? You can share with them experiences. You can hope that they will want something that's healthy. But if they want what they shouldn't want, or they don't want what they should want, then that's something only they can work on. Right? You see this with your kids sometimes. You so want them to want something, right? You see it on yourself, right? You meet a girl. She's an amazing girl. You know, She's going through all of Seder's Rami and Mishnayos. That's unbelievable. She's bucking Shas. This is the one. And you so want her to want you. You go out in the Churva Square, you're sitting, you're learning Yerushalmi Chagiga. How could she not notice you? And you're just Shatnistein to her, you know? So, you so want her to want you. If she doesn't want you, you can't come into her life. Right? Now, what that means, therefore, at its core, is that tefillah gives me an opportunity to think about, what do I really want? Do I want what I want? Is what I want what I should want? Is what I want what I could want? Right? 2,200 years ago, when the Jews came, 2,500 years ago, when the Jews came back to Eretz Israel from Babel, and they rebuilt a second Beit HaMikdash, and Ezra establishes the Anshei Knesset Gdola, the men of the Great Assembly, which your Rebbe can tell you all about, and they realize that something is very much awry. There are things that are not quite kosher. Kohanim are marrying non-Jews. People have lost their relationship with Shabbat, with Kashrut. So Ezra somehow affects a mass tshuva movement. And one of the things that they realize is the Jewish people have forgotten what they could want. So they create this list of the things that we could want in this world. Right? If you can go a single day without wanting that people should be healthy, without wanting that the people you love should be healthy and the people you don't know should be healthy, if you can go a day without genuinely wanting that the people in the Nuba Mountains in South Sudan should stop suffering, then there's something wrong. And the process of wanting that, of deciding even that I want to want that, that has an impact on me. That changes me. I become a different person. And that's really the goal, or the first goal of tefillah. Tefillah is all about figuring out what I want. Because wanting, and wanting better, and wanting more, and wanting differently, changes who I am. And by the way, on a mystical level, when I change, the whole world changes with me. Right? That's the beginning, the foundation of tefillah. Now, there's a lot more to talk about, and I'll just tell you one last thing. I learned in the army, there is nothing more powerful than Kach Ratzon. Nothing more powerful than Mopar. And I watched people who would, on the face of things, ostensibly be the guys leading the charge, big, built up, you know. And for whatever the reason, they couldn't get up the hill. They couldn't get up in the morning. They lost it under fire. And I watched guys, 90-pound weaklings, literally you could pick them up with your hand. And they did the most incredible things because they were fueled by pure, raw, unadulterated will. Koach Ratzon. That is the most important thing in the army, and it's the most important thing in life. What people don't realize is that your will, your Ratzon, you have to work on it. It waxes and wanes. It's just like you have if you break your arm, and your arm's in a cast, okay? So, if you're sitting with your arm in a cast for 3-4 months, when you take the cast off, what do you have to do?
Work on your arm.
You have to do physiotherapy, you have to work it out, because it's atrophied, it stopped working right. Well, the same is true for Koach Ratzon, right? That is the single greatest challenge in all of Jewish education today, right? The second half of senior year in high school. It's like they say to you, no, douse that willpower. We want you to do nothing for 6 months. Let's just turn your brains into mush. You know what? It's not enough you have nothing to do and we don't know what to do with you. Go home and watch TV for 6 months. But don't watch anything healthy. Watch garbage. That will be awesome, because then when you get to Israel, it'll be so great. Right? There is an opportunity to exercise our will, to work on that ratzon, and that is tefillah. Tefillah is this opportunity to ask myself, you know, you ever wonder why there's no tefillah for finding the right person? I mean, you're going to get into this world. Some of you may already be there. Who is she? Is she right for me? Should I want her? Do I want her? She drives me nuts, but I'm in love with her. So shouldn't there be a tefillah? Hashem, just allow me to find the right person. Help me to find the right person. There is a tefillah. Right? We touched on this in Rambam. Right? Dat is all about relationships. You give us the ability to develop healthy relationships. So in that tefillah, one of the many things you can think about in that tefillah is, well, so what do I want in my relationships? What's missing in my relationships? Is what I want in my relationships what I should want in my relationships? How do I fix those relationships? How do I change those relationships? Right? You're having a tough time with your dad or your girlfriend or whatever it is. Tachronin ladandat is this oasis of time to just think about that. Right? You don't need to go out for a run to do that. That's the beginning of the tip of the pin of the needle that's in the tip of the iceberg of tefillah. Did you follow that allegory? Right? A little bit of food for thought. So tefillah is to struggle with what I want. Wanting is how we bring things into the world. We have to work on exercising our wanting because we change who we are. Right? And that's the foundation of tefillah. Now we're going to get deeper into this every week as we go on. But that's a little food for thought. Okay? Any questions? You just want to veg on that for a while. Cool? Okay? I will tell you... hang on a second. I don't even know how to turn this off. One second.